I'm Matthew.
I'm Marty.
I'm Carlos.
And we are the Heroes 3. So, hey, April Fools, I guess. I don't know. We just wanted to kind of wanted an excuse to talk about this, or Carlos did. So today we're talking about Pride of the X-Men, which is a lot more Asian animation than you would think. So
damn right.
We'll get into that. But Carlos, try to explain why you brought this to us in under a minute.
Okay. Well, to pull the curtain away a little bit, we are all pretty busy with various things. Mm. In particular, VGMCon is coming up, and we will all be there. So if you guys are in the area and you care and you want to say hi to us, that will be where you can do that. We always love to celebrate April Fools in different ways, and some years we work harder than others. So I wanted an easy deliverable, and nothing is easier to me than talking about the X-Men. And Pride of the X-Men here asterisk Japanese animation. So Toei produced the animation for this pilot that came out in 1989, I believe. That's probably not when I saw it. Actually, it might have been, because it did run on TV, and the first time I ever saw this was on TV early in the morning. I think it must have been a Ninja Turtles episode. I told you guys I got up at 3 in the morning to watch Ninja Turtles, but I was wrong. It was 3 in the afternoon. But so I was a very...
Man, that's like such a beautiful story.
Yeah.
I actually, sorry, that's a quick tangent. I remember waking up at... And it's funny because now it's... A lot of people consider it one of the worst Gundam series, but I did get up at 5 a.m. to watch the finale of Gundam Seed because I had been watching through the series.
That's
and
great.
I was like, well, when's it coming on? Oh, 5 a.m.? What? Okay. So I watched it. I don't remember anything about that show.
That's okay.
That's what I
One of my least favorite Gundam shows, but that's okay. Yeah, so I was a very dedicated cartoon watcher as a kid. And at this time, I was also a very dedicated X-Men fan. And I mean, we can all talk about our experiences with the X-Men. But very quickly, I thought, yeah, let's do this for April Fools. We don't have to write a script. We don't have to come up with some stupid jokes. I don't have to write That's a true. Quiz or anything. So... yeah, let's riff on some X-Men, because there's a lot that we can pull from it, not only regarding animation, which is also something we've tried to focus a little bit more on with the podcast, but also the ephemera around Pride of the X-Men, because it extends beyond the TV. Well, I guess it's a TV, but a TV in a different place.
Well, I think we definitely need to let in the elephant in the room, which is like...
X-Men.
Yeah, probably one of the most beloved, addictive, fun, frustrating, unforgettable video games ever made. The X-Men arcade game it does not exist without this pilot, Pride of the X-Men.
Yeah.
And so if you've ever wondered kind of through the years as you've played that game, like, who's the character Dazzler and why is she in this game?
Dazzler!
That's why.
Origins to this, yeah.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, all of the designs that they used in that Konami game, which came out in 92, which, I mean, man, 89 to 92, I guess, like, into 93, such formational years for little Carlos. You've got, like, Street Fighter, you've got X-Men.
Oh,
you've
man,
got,
totally. Like, and, yeah, the X-Men, like, kind of have their ascendancy in a major way in that time, because you've got the Jim Lee and Chris Claremont run the infamous X-Men number one, you know, gatefold cover with all the multiple issues. And yeah, I mean, it was just like everywhere on the playground, like sneaking comics in every classroom. I mean, that's at least my memory of it. It's just, yeah, X-Men were just inescapable at that time.
I literally would like carry comics with me wherever I went.
Yeah, no, definitely.
Yeah, my little stack of comics. And honestly, yeah, the X-Men were my gateway drug into comics. I think my mom bought me like a pack. It was like a selection of random comics from like an outlet store. And amongst that set of random comics, there was some issues of Uncanny X-Men. This was right before the X-Men number one launch.
Yeah.
And also issues of Classic X-Men, which at that time was basically them just reprinting older issues of X-Men. Which is kind of a weird thing to think about, but they would add stuff like a backstory in the back, and all the covers were like that new silver original
border, or am I remembering it wrong?
Some of them, yes. But most of all of the covers were new artwork related to the stories that they were reprinting. But with that, you would get artwork from Arthur Adams, Mike Mignola, these like amazing, like actually one of my favorite X-Men covers ever is a Mignola X-Men piece where they were reprinting them fighting Dracula. And it's got all the X-Men in the foreground facing away from you. And they're standing off against Dracula, and it just looks insane. It's like one of my favorite X-Men covers ever. But without getting too far into the weeds, I liked all this stuff a lot. Also, trading cards were a big deal back then. So like my brother I collected the Marvel Universe cards, and the X-Men Series 1 cards were all drawn by Jim Lee. Like he drew every card on that. Some looked better than others, but it was like such a cool time to be a fan of the X-Men. And I mean, they were raking in the money from it.
And that was a source of like many a playground argument, because with all those Marvel cards, they were... Maybe there were some attempts to do this earlier, but essentially like they had quantified like everyone's abilities like across all the Marvel comics. So they'd, you know, break out all these arguments about, you know, like Hulk versus Colossus or whatever. And you had this like hard data to back you up.
It was also like such a great foundational thing to, as a fan of the comics, you're a kid, so you can't just keep up with every comic book. But if you had the collection of cards, you have the basic information and the clues to lead you to reading more about these characters in each trading card. So
yeah, it was like your own little encyclopedia. So
You would know. And I mean, now we're at the point where we've almost crossed over the hump of Marvel popularity in popular culture, where we had this whole series of films that were just the biggest movies in the world, whether you like them or not. And they also pulled from a lot of these stories from when I was a kid. And the X-Men, you've always kind of wanted to get those realizations. And the X-Men movies, I mean, I love X-Men 1 and 2. I love those films a lot. And we've talked about them on the podcast, because a lot of like Hong Kong DNA fell into that as well. And they were never the realized stories that you would hope for, but it was still kind of fun. But like Infinity Gauntlet in the comic books was like, for me, it was like a huge deal, because it was like all the characters are fighting each other, or not fighting each other, but fighting together, and you're seeing these crazy interactions. And they were able to kind of pull that off in the films to a degree of success. So it was something I never thought would ever happen. So it's kind of cool that we're kind of past that, and now actually in popular culture, in a way, we're getting an X-Men resurgence, or at least the rumblings of that, because we've got this X-Men 97 show that just came out, which is a successor to what this pilot would end up kind of leading to, because this Pride of the X-Men was kind of a failed pilot for a TV series. But then shortly after, Marvel Productions, who was the company that handled this, reimagining. They would go on to do the 1992 X-Men cartoon, which was based on the Jim Lee stuff that we were just mentioning. So then that show ran until 97. And now here we are, where there's a new series that's kind of picking up where that left off, but kind of like smoothing out a lot of the kind of wrinkles of the old show, because
that show was my intro to the X-Men.
Love
so
it.
Awesome. I'm a little younger than y'all, and so my introduction to comic books was 100% the Fox News or Fox News.
Whoa.
I always say that.
Period.
I always say that. Fox Kids.
He always says he loves Fox News.
I always, all the time.
It's just.
No.
Doesn't end.
Nope. Don't put that evil in the
April
world.
Fools.
April Fools.
We're going live. Sorry.
Fox Kids. Yeah. Fox Kids Afternoon Block was my intro. So I always, every day I would watch the X-Men show and the Spider-Man show.
Yeah.
And those are a trip to revisit.
It's not
a great trip, but it's a fascinating trip.
Yeah, it's interesting looking back on the shows, and it's interesting seeing that there was a lot of hype for this new X-Men cartoon because, mm-hmm. yeah, if you go back and rewatch these shows, they're really simple and the production value varied greatly.
Oh, so it is so all over the place. It's insane. Because, like, you'll see stills from especially the X-Men show. Spider-Man, not as much, but especially the X-Men show from the 90s. And there are some beautiful frames. There's some beautiful shots, some really nice animation. But it's just so uneven.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like this is Pride of the X-Men's a little uneven, too.
Hey, how dare you?
Not as much, sure. But I know. I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I also watched this for the first time about 3 hours ago.
No,
so.
that's exciting. Which is perfect. I love it. Yeah, I would say that if you're looking back in time and wanting to relive some great animation regarding superheroes, you're pretty much better off watching Batman the Animated Series because
it's not even close.
Much more timeless to me, mm-hmm. and the kind of Art Deco stylings and the kind of approach to the characters, basically solidifying the icons of Batman in a way that I wish that X-Men show did. But here's the thing that I also love about the X-Men that's also a criticism of the X-Men: it's complicated.
No, very true.
Yeah,
it's very comic booky.
Yeah, the first X-Men comics I read were just smack in the middle of random storylines. You know, Xavier was in space; he could walk, but also like this random stuff. These so many characters in each page, but in a way that was like really fun to me because I wanted to find out who these characters were. I wanted to understand what this whole deal was, and they all looked cool. You know, and the artwork was really cool to me too. So the same thing that you can criticize for the X-Men, I think, is also kind of a thing that I really enjoy about it. And the show kind of pulled certain ideas from the comic books and tried to give you basically a watered down version of it. And I mean, whatever. But here we are, this Pride of the X-Men. Like I said, it was a pilot. They aired it in the mornings, like, randomly, because it was, like, part of this Marvel block, where it was really, honestly, just this, and, like, there was a Spider-Man cartoon. So they would show episodes of that Spider-Man cartoon, and then every once in a while, you'd see the X-Men cartoon. And for a while, it was kind of like a white whale to me, because I knew about it, but you couldn't, like, reliably, like, see it.
Yeah, it's like,
but
were you just dreaming? Like, did this thing actually exist?
But it was... like such a cool dream.
I think it's the this is secondhand knowledge, but I think the last season of the X-Men show just aired, but it wasn't syndicated. So some people, like, you literally would have seen the episode once, and then you might have never seen that episode again.
Mm-hmm.
Which is just insane to think about.
Yeah.
My favorite part is that the first thing that comes up when you search Pride of the X-Men on YouTube is this like HD remaster, whatever it's someone posted. And I'm guessing it's just straight up from the VHS tape because very beginning is a promo for some Spider-Man games and then Spider-Man telling you to register to vote.
If you think superheroes like me can fight all your battles for you, think again. Voting for your local, state, and federal representative lets you choose who's on your side in all the issues we face today. From the little ones to the really big ones, too. But before you can vote, you need to register. So do it now. For registration forms or information on how to register, visit your local participating video store. Have a voice in your future. Register. And vote. And Tom Spider-Man sent you.
Yeah, so the tape that I have, which I still have, and I shared pictures.
And who to vote for, which is really interesting.
Yeah.
Yep.
Dukakis guy. Yes. It's not that old. It's not huge that old, sorry.
Actually, Dukakis would have made so much sense, like, crossing over into comic issues at that time.
Nice. The tape that I have didn't have that video game advertisement. It just had that Spider-Man vote thing, and we'll drop the audios from that.
Oh definitely.
But this is a thing where if you ask, if I was on like a game show and the game show is like just quote like a a thing. This, I can quote like basically every word of this episode and from the VHS tape. And it would also, the other one would be Transformers 1986, like Transformers the movie. And it's one of these things where if I start, it's like almost like I have to force myself to stop, like just quoting it. It's really dumb. But so we've got the X-Men here, but it's more of a classic X-Men. This is actually pulling from the team that you would know from the giant size X-Men. So in the original 60s team, there was Cyclops, Marvel Girl, Jean Grey, Beast, Angel, and Iceman. And then there was like the book kind of got canceled. It wasn't really doing great. And then they relaunched it in 75, and they it was a special issue called Giant Size X-Men number one. And fun fact, when I was a kid, I had a copy of this comic, which is insane. I got it at a rummage sale, and I let my cousin borrow it, and he lost it. He said it got stolen or something.
Oh, dude, and isn't that like a huge...
It's if I had it now, like low end, I could make like $1,500 on the book.
Jesus.
Yeah, if it was in good condition, I could make like $15,000 on this comic.
That's insane.
So it's something I think about every once in a while and cry about, but that's okay. But this team is a bit different. Cyclops also is the leader of this team, but you've got almost like this international group of characters. Colossus from Russia, Nightcrawler from Germany, Storm from Africa, Wolverine's from Canada. Although, if you watch this episode,
oh man,
he's not he's from Australia.
Yeah.
Welcome her. Wait, she's not joining the X-Men, is she? She's just a kid.
Which is a choice that they made basically.
Well, this
because...
is Exhibit A for Hugh Jackman getting the part.
Like, oh, nice.
The auditions with this.
There we go. Yeah, I think it was honestly. They've talked to people over the years, and I think it's honestly just that. Australian stuff was popular at the time, like
yeah,
Crocodile
that's true.
Dundee.
That's Crocodile Dundee. That's yeah, late
so
80s.
So they just made that choice.
Pyro, I think, has a big Aussie accent in this too.
Welcome to Asteroid M. Don't you just love a good Barbie?
He does, but I don't know too much about Pyro to know if that's accurate or not. But so this team is it's cool because I mean the X-Men as an allegory is like, you know, persecuted, you know, mutants, you know, and they used a lot of racial allegories for that. So with the giant size X-Men team, it was cool to see that they're pulling from all these, you know, races around the world to make this team. And it's basically that setup on this cartoon, minus a couple of characters. And they throw Dazzler in, who wasn't on the original team. But as far as like the kind of material they're pulling from, this is just a pilot. So it's just its own original story. But based on the characters they're using and this roster, you're kind of pulling from the Chris Claremont era of X-Men, like around the Dark Phoenix saga, which like that was like for me was the classic X-Men issues that I had like basically the whole Dark Phoenix saga, so that was like really amazing. Influential to my taste as a kid. And Kitty Pryde was introduced to the team just shortly before that, and here you see her as kind of like the insert character, the point of view of the viewer. And she's arriving at the X-Mansion, and she's a mutant, and she's conflicted about being a mutant. And she joins the team, in a way, for this episode, and there's a crisis, and she has a growing moment where she's got interactions with Nightcrawler, and she's kind of afraid of him, but by the end of the episode...
Well, Nightcrawler is like also kind of being a sex pest.
But, yeah, there's a little bit of that. But there's, you know, he's basically... there's like a redemption for him. He like sacrifices himself to save the world. And all in all, I think it kind of holds together as like an 80s cartoon, very in line with something like G.I. Joe, but like a little bit of higher production value. I think.
And pretty eventful for like the running time.
Yeah, 20 minutes. And you get all these action beats and character beats.
They literally go to space in the first episode.
Yeah, so fun. Because, Asteroid M is like Magneto's, like, off outer space, like, home. And they visit that for the finale here. And I love, personally, like, when they introduce Kitty to the team, it's a Danger Room sequence. So in the X-Men, the Danger Room is like this VR training area. And each character gets their own nice introduction. And it's kind of got this, like... Incan kind of, you know, Mexico vibe to the setting, and they would pull those ideas for the X-Men game too, the Konami game.
However, we had time to locate their base on Island M.
Yeah, which, I mean, my memories of that were so much fun too. Like, anytime you would go to Chuck E. Cheese or the arcade, you would hear like a selection of games the loudest. Mm-hmm. It would be like Mortal Kombat, yeah. Daytona USA, and this machine.
Yeah.
Yep.
And yeah, if you were lucky, where you had like the two monitor version, or with the mirror to make the monitor seamless. And
now that, and that's this, that shows the longevity of it. Like, even whenever I was a kid, you know, years later, they're still everywhere. Like, any place. I mentioned before, but the big arcade/roller rink in Savannah was Star Castle. Star Castle definitely had an X-Men arcade machine.
It's a
classic.
Amazing. Actually, I feel like I'm still building memories with that game. My birthday last year, we ended up kind of after dinner and drinks and stuff going to this like arcade bar, and it was a person on every joystick on the large version of it.
Oh, that rules.
You know, it's like with these modern arcade bars, it's like you're just paying a cover to go in and all the cabinets are unlocked. So that's really the only way you can beat X-Men. I remember the first time like playing it with my friend Hugh on a MAME emulator all the way through, and it's like, oh man, this would have been like $85 to beat this.
It's definitely one of those, if you had a birthday party at a place and they give you either like a free play or give you a bag full of tokens, you would try to get as far as you could. And sometimes you were lucky that you would jump in to a game that was already like halfway through or towards the end.
Yeah, that's your only shot to see like one of the later levels, because it gets remarkably unsportsmanlike or something.
Cheap hits. Yeah, all those beat 'em ups, you know, you're just wailing on them, but enemies become, you know, damage sponges, and they hit you pretty hard, so you die in one hit. The other thing we should mention, I mean, besides the wonderful music that we all love, it's very sample heavy, where they use voice samples, and some of the hilarious voice samples from the Konami game are the best.
X-Chicken is...
Yeah.
X-Chicken!
Favorite. Magneto has, like, the best pulls.
Master of Magnet! You are helpless against my power, X-Men! Come, X-Chicken! Die!
Yeah.
It's, yeah.
Some good
to die. Isn't come to die?
Welcome to die.
Welcome to die.
Yeah.
Welcome to die!
I was literally thinking, as we were talking about this, I was like, I think I'll probably put this clip here and... maybe through this clip there.
Yeah. It would be more in line with an April Fool's episode for me to just have a soundboard and just punish you guys with sound drops.
Oh, dude, perfect.
I don't have that set up. But,
well, I'll punish the listener with them.
Yeah. And like some of the tracks literally are like that, where you're hearing like... over and over. It's really, really good.
But yeah, that level one BGM is just gorgeous. Mm-hmm. It's so good.
Yeah, the game's simple enough that anybody can just hit on buttons and have a good time, and it's definitely meant for multiplayer situations. And yeah, like you said, that big cabinet, two screens, which is like like you were saying, one screen is normal, the other one's like basically on the mounted at the bottom with a mirror reflecting it to kind of mimic a double screen situation. And I think that had something to do with like the signal going through. I used to know, it's been a long time, but wasn't the first game to do that.
There was no way to get the monitors absolutely butted against each other either, I don't think.
Yeah. And right. So I think it was a space.
Seamless thing. Yeah, it's great.
But yeah, getting back to the episode, yeah, Magneto playing the kind of very typical villain. He's stolen a piece of Cerebro, which is Professor X's like amplifier for his telepathy to find mutants. And he's basically using the power from that circuit to pull a comet to smash the Earth. You know, supervillain stuff. Yeah. And the X-Men have to fly up to Asteroid M to stop him. This Cyclops with the skull cap is a fun design, like for classic X-Men. Not my favorite, though. I'm definitely more in line with the Jim Lee designs. But Cyclops is definitely one of my favorites.
But then you have to draw his hair is the thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's cool. It looks so awesome.
It's so hard.
I love the storm design.
Amazing.
I have a lot of fondness for the white outfit from the 90s cartoon, but I love this storm outfit. Mm-hmm. It's so cool.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very iconic. All of them look very iconic. That Colossus outfit is so good that over the years they've tried to change it, but nothing comes as close as that classic Colossus design. The color choices, just the kind of iconic kind of unitard kind of situation going on. It's just the best. And I honestly, if there was a time travel device and I got one chance to change the past, it would be that I would get more of this show. Like, that would be my dream. Because, I know they would have eventually done, like, a Dark Phoenix saga, like, series. And eventually
it'd be cool to see what their Jean Grey design looked like or what Kitty Pryde's actual outfit would look like.
Yeah, totally. It would be amazing. Actually, 1 year ago, I literally was treated to a dream that it was like the Dark Phoenix saga in this style. And I was like, I think I tweeted it out. Like, I couldn't believe that I was gifted such a wonderful thing from my brain.
That's amazing.
Yeah, it was amazing. But yeah, real light this time. I hope you guys don't get fooled too hard out there. And if you are hype about X-Men like I am, hopefully this new show turns into something fun. I've only seen like the episodes that are available right now, and I don't know how many they're gonna do. But to me, I think the production value is nice when it needs to be. It's kind of looks weird, and it's a mixture of 2D and 3D 97. But I do honestly feel like it's the best animated X-Men thing that I've seen in a very, very long time. So, I'm hopeful that this turns into something really fun. And I always love to see the X-Men. And you can tell that people are very excited for the X-Men. And go X-Men.
Yeah, I saw the first episode and I did enjoy it. I'm curious to keep watching it, but I like it.
Cool.
Well, and it's such an amazing like curiosity that it exists and
For real.
Yeah, I don't know. Speaks to the kind of project that's possible in kind of our strange modern nostalgic internet world. And I don't know. Excited.
With the Marvel stuff, like all the MCU stuff, how everything has to be connected, you know, and I know that the X-Men could potentially be like the next big thing for them if they wanted to invest it and people were interested. I almost wonder if, in a way, this version of the X-Men, this animated version, actually could be the kind of blueprint for what they do in the movies.
It's like a bit of like a testing the water or something.
Yeah. Well, without getting into too much spoiler territory from the films, the Easter eggs that we've been given for the X-Men have all been related to this animated version. So I don't know what that says, and that who knows, it's just multiverse nonsense, but it would, I don't know. It's kind of interesting to me.
I'm so burned out on all of that, but
it is. Everybody.
But if there's cool show, if there's a cool show, then I'll watch the cool show.
Yeah,
so.
I agree.
Yeah, well put.
But yeah, well, thank you so much for checking out the show. This is a quick, easy breezy one. We're actually literally about to record our actual next episode, so that'll come out in a couple of days if you're listening to this today. It came out, so we hope you enjoyed it. Check us out: Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Blue Sky, Threads, everything else. So here is number 3 podcast.
Nice. One last thing that I learned just doing notes for this episode was that the voice actor for Magneto is
Earl Bowen.
It's Earl Bowen, who was like the doctor. That too. I think of the doctor from Terminator 2.
Oh, man, he is LeChuck.
Yeah, that's amazing.
The main one I recognized was Kath Soucie, who does Kitty Pryde. But she's also like, I mean, she's a billion things, but she's Phil Lil and their mom and Rugrats. That's the main thing I recognized her from.
Yeah, nice. I wish I could find more crediting for the Japanese side of it because, what's available is like, it just lists Toei as a blanket credit.
Yeah,
it's too bad. There could be some legendary animators that work.
They're
on
really,
this.
You know, you never know.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining the episode, everyone. Have a great week.
Peace.